But today we're going to talk about God's timeline. You know, up until a few centuries ago, I don't know if you guys are into archaeology, but the archaeologists had a lot of difficulty understanding Egyptian hieroglyphics. They just couldn't understand it. They didn't know what was going on. And, you know, all over the tombs of Egypt, the pyramids, they had these inscriptions painted, carved, animals, people, symbols, icons, and kind of scratched their head at the meanings. In 1799, there was this guy, Pierre François Picard, discovered a black stone with three sections of writing on it. And the top part was hieroglyphics. The middle part was kind of middle Egyptian. And then the bottom part was ancient Greece. Because it presented the same text in all the order, all of a sudden now they had the key to the code. They could understand what the hieroglyphics were because they knew how to interpret kind of middle Egypt, and they knew how to interpret the ancient Greek. But it's called the Rosetta Stone. You guys have heard the program that they have on the radio, the internet, Rosetta, where you can learn different languages. It's named after that. Well, tonight, is it nighttime yet or what? Today, we have this chapter 9 in the book of Daniel, which is kind of the Rosetta Stone to understanding God's plan in prophecy. And it gives us a good timeline of what God is doing and what he has done. A lot of this is going to be past history for us, but some of it remains in the future. Chapter 9 of Daniel, this is where we get our seven-year period for the tribulation. Yeah, I mentioned earlier in our study that the book of Daniel gives us a proper foundation for other works of prophecy, and especially the book of Revelation. If you understand Daniel, especially these next few chapters, it's kind of amazing how all this falls together. Actually, chapter 9 kind of cracks the code on understanding what God has in store for the world, and in particular for Israel. Chapter 9 of Daniel, it's the key to unlocking how we look at prophecy. So today, through the end of the book of Daniel, put on your thinking caps, because some of it I have a hard time, and I've read the book of Daniel, I don't know how many times, a lot of times, a hard time understanding it, but a lot of it, like it's chapter 10 and 11, is history. We'll go through that. Today, though, through the end of the book of Daniel, we need to really think about what God is speaking to us. And chapter 9 gives us this general roadmap of what God has in store for Israel, and especially for Jerusalem. Did you know Jerusalem is his city, the city of Zion? It's the only nation, and it's the only city that God has ever picked out. He did not pick out Chicago or Paris or London. He picked out Jerusalem to proclaim his name from, and he's got a plan for it. By the way, there's going to be a test at the end of this chapter. There's going to be a test. I'm going to test you guys. That's why I gave you the chart. It's a cheat sheet. We're going to look at three different things in this chapter. Recognizing the times. Daniel recognized the times he lived in. We need to recognize the times we live in. Then there's this intense prayer that Daniel prays for himself and for his nation, for his people of Israel. And then we're going to look at God's plan for Israel and Jerusalem according to this chapter. So let's look at recognizing the times first. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the lineage of the Medes, who was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, if you remember, Persia had conquered Babylon. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by the books the number of the years specified by the word of the Lord through Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years of desolation of Jerusalem. Now, Daniel's probably in his mid to late 80s, maybe even creeping up on 90. Israel, because of God's disobedience, has been in captivity through first the Babylonian and now the Persian Empire for just about 70 years. So this time factor is about ending. During the Babylonian siege, Jeremiah the prophet, he prophesied that Israel would go into captivity for 70 years. And actually, when you end up looking at the different books of Nehemiah, Ezra, it's to the T. The very day that they get back into the land is exactly 70 years. So Daniel recognizes that this time is about to end. But why 70 years? Why 70 years in the land or in captivity? Second Chronicles in chapter 36 gives us kind of a simple explanation. It says, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths, as long as she lays desolate, she kept Sabbaths to fulfill 70 years. So he gives us this explanation. What does it mean, though? What does it mean? You know, when God communicated to Moses the law, they're about to come into the land. You know, they wandered around the desert for 40 years, about to come into the land. Moses communicated to the people, through, you know, God communicated to him, Moses communicated the law, that once they were in the land, they were to obey, well, even in the desert, they were to obey the law of Moses, what we call the Levitical law. And one of the particular laws is the agricultural law. Israel was to be able to plow the land. If you were a farmer, you would plow the land for 6 years. And on the seventh year, you would let it rest. A lot of farmers, they rotate crops today, so it's kind of similar. But and in the obedience to this law, and it was peculiar to Israel, 6 years they would plow, harvest, you know, tend the garden, harvest it. Seventh year, they would let it sit. They would let it rest. And there's good, you know, there's good science in that. But in their obedience, God would bless them in the seventh year. They wouldn't have to farm. They wouldn't have to harvest any of that. In their obedience, God would bless the seventh year. And they could leave the land at rest, and God would, through faith and through their obedience, God would supply an abundance of product. So they took a year off. They would take a whole year off. The land would rest and recuperate from the 6 years. Well, they never let the land rest. They never followed that commandment to let it rest. So I got this up on do the math, right? We got a lot of math in this. From the time Israel comes into the land in Joshua chapter 1 until the time they are taken away by Nebuchadnezzar, 490 years. You got it? 490 years. I'll keep up with this. If you take that 490 years and you divide it by 7, you get 70 years. God is going to allow the land to rest for 70 years because they did not obey the commandment of the Lord. So that's how you get the 70 years. Now, Daniel recognized that time was ending because he read the prophecies in Jeremiah. He takes the words of Jeremiah at face value. 70 years is 70 years. It's not spiritualized or it's not allegorical. He took it at face value, understanding 70 years from Jeremiah meant 70 years. So when you get into doing the math in the rest of the chapter, we are going to take everything at face value, just like Daniel did, recognizing his times. Now, before this, Gabriel, the angel, is going to come and give him an explanation of what's going to happen with Israel. So we're away from the 70 years. Actually, Daniel understands that the 70-year period is about to end, and he puts a little fire in his heart. I think he was excited. He was excited. You know, we should be excited when we see the world it's in today, the shape it's in. We should be excited. Jesus said, when you see all of these things happening, what does he say? Look up, right? your redemption draws nearer. So this is happening to Daniel 2,500 years ago. He's excited. What's going to happen with Israel? We're just about to get out. We don't know if Daniel ever got out of Babylon or Persia. We don't know. I mean, he was older. We know that he went to be with the Lord at some point. So he says this, "Then I set my face toward the Lord God to make requests by prayer and supplications with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes." So he's humbling himself in his prayer to the Lord. So what is this prayer about? Well, he recognizes that the captivity is almost over. Israel will be returning to the land. And it just puts a little fire in his heart, passion in this prayer. We're going to see what the prayer is about. Daniel is asking God, okay, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen with Israel? But the prayer is not just about what's next. There's also a recognition, there's a confession that he himself intercedes for Israel on, that Israel went into captivity. Why did they go into captivity? Disobedience. They did not follow the laws of God. So he says in verse 4, he says, "I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession and said, O Lord, great and awesome God who keeps his covenant and mercy with those who love him and with those who keep his commandments. We," and he's including himself, he's humbling himself, "we as Israel, we have sinned and committed iniquity. We have done wickedly and rebelled, even by departing from your precepts and your judgments. Neither have we heeded your servants, the prophets." They didn't listen to Jeremiah. They didn't listen to, listen to Ezekiel. "We have not heeded your servants, the prophets, who spoke in your name to our kings and our princes, to our fathers, and all the people of the land." Now, one of the amazing things about Daniel, he never blames God for the tragedy that happened to the nation of Israel. You know, everybody always blames God. You know, everybody blames God when they don't understand. A lot of time it's in their own situation that God is allowing these things to happen. Daniel discovers the word that the 70 years are just about up by listening to Jeremiah the prophet. We're pretty sure that Daniel was just a young kid in Jerusalem when Jeremiah was prophesying. And we understand from the book of Jeremiah that all the warnings that were given to Israel before it went into captivity. Think about this. Daniel was a young boy. He, while Jeremiah was prophesying, he was in the royal family. I don't know if you knew that. He was from the tribe of Judah. So he's the royal family. He would have been in the king's court. He would have heard Jeremiah prophesy. Daniel saw and heard Jeremiah probably as a youth. Daniel also saw the leaders completely disobey the word of Jeremiah. And it's this line of thought that the prayer of Daniel has its roots. He says, "O Lord, righteousness belongs to you, but to us shame of face, as it is this day, the men of Judah to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and all of Israel, those near and those far off, all the countries to which you have driven them because the unfaithfulness which they have committed against you. O Lord, to us belongs shame of face, and to our kings, our princes, and our fathers, because we have sinned against you." So this prayer that he prays begins with confession of sin. He's actually confessing the sin of Israel itself. Even though Israel is punished for 70 years, they never deserved the mercy of God. You know, one of the things that we have to recognize, and I've recognized in my own life, I have to depend on the mercy of God. I have nothing to give God. I can nothing to show him, nothing to say I've done this or I've done that. It's all about his mercy. I've said this before. David, in his early walk, you see him kind of saying, "Lord, you know, I've done every this, done that." And then all of a sudden, he was broken. Well, we know he was broken when he committed adultery and murder. And it was almost after Psalm 52, when he begins to say, "To you belongs mercy. I come to you according to mercy." So you never come to God with your fist up. You won't win. I've tried it, you know. You never do. But you come to God, Lord, I don't deserve your mercy. I don't deserve the blessings that you have given me in my life. I do deserve just about captivity, just like the Jews. So even though Israel is punished, you know, for 70 years, they really don't deserve this mercy at the end. Listen closely to a man that has lived a few lifetimes. To the Lord our God belongs what? Mercy and forgiveness, though we have rebelled against him. You see, the contrary, rebelled against him, yet he's belongs mercy and forgiveness. We have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God to walk in his laws, which he set before us by his servants, the prophets. Yes, all Israel has transgressed your law and has departed so as not to obey your voice. Therefore, the curse and the oath written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, has been poured out on us because we have sinned against him. If you get a chance, read chapter 28 of Deuteronomy, because they have the cursings and the blessings. The cursings: if you follow me, I will bless you. The cursings itself, that was the blessings, by the way. The cursings itself are, if you don't follow me, I am going to disperse you to all the nations of the world. All the nations of the world. And that happened. That happened a few times. So read that. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, if you get a chance, you'll see what they're talking about. They're coming into the land with Joshua, and they read the cursings and the blessings. And he has confirmed his word, which he spoke against us and against our judges who judged us, by bringing upon us a great disaster, for under the whole heaven such has never been done as which has been done to Jerusalem. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this disaster has come upon us, yet we have not made our prayer before the Lord our God, that we might turn from our iniquities and understanding your truth. Like I said, you can read all that. Therefore, the Lord has kept the disaster in mind and brought upon us, for the Lord our God is righteous, and all the works which he does, though we have not obeyed his voice. You know, in those blessings, God has been faithful to Israel. But also, he's been faithful to Israel in his word, in the cursings. And now, O Lord our God, who brought your people out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand and made yourself a name as it is this day, we have sinned. We have done wickedly. O Lord, according to all your righteousness, I pray, let your anger and your fury be turned away from your holy city, Jerusalem, your holy mountain, because of our sins. For the iniquity of our fathers, Jerusalem and your people are a reproach to all those around us. If you've ever read the book of Nehemiah, when they come into the city for the first time, they're just totally discouraged. It's wrecked. The walls are torn down. The temple is burned out. The houses are, you know, burned down or tore down. Now, therefore, our God, hear the prayer of your servant. And this is Daniel speaking, and his supplications. For the Lord's sake, cause your face to shine on your sanctuary, which is desolate. O my God, incline your ear and hear. Open your eyes. Now, he's doing this, remember. He's praying. He's fasting. Sackcloth and ashes. That is a type of just humbling yourself before the Lord. Incline your ear and hear. Open your eyes and see our desolations and the city which is called by your name. It's Jerusalem. For we do not present our supplications before because of our righteous deeds, but because of your great mercies. Very a wise prayer. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, listen and act. Do not delay for your own sake, my God, for your city and your people are called by your name. He's approaching God according to his word. He's approaching God according to his mercies and his great gentleness that he has toward the people of God. It's an amazing prayer because it's full of humility. You know, he recognized the goodness of God. He recognized the sinfulness of, well, not just them, but all of us. But asking God for forgiveness and mercy, Daniel understood the heart of God. He understood the heart of God. Now, God does not have pleasure when he sends us into captivity. I've been sent into captivity before. I have, you know. Not 70 years. I have been. God has dealt with me in a way of chastisement. He doesn't have, you know, a pleasure when he chastises his children. What is the purpose of chastisement? To bring us back around. That's what he, it's not punishment, it's chastisement, that he could bring us back to sanity. Or maybe even humility of heart. You know, you get that hard heart after a while and you just, you know, you kind of ignore God, but he wants us to have humble hearts and approach him according to mercy. Listen to the heart of God in this manner in Psalm 34 and Psalm 51. He says, "The Lord is near to those that have a broken heart and saves such as has a contrite spirit," or a humble spirit. "The sacrifices of God are what? A broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise." So this prayer of Daniel, he acknowledges God's righteousness in sending them into captivity for 70 years, but what? Now he begins to plead mercy, knowing that this time is just about up. Final section, though, it's a little tricky. You have your cheat sheets. So God's plan for Israel and Jerusalem, that's what this next section is about, the rest of the chapter. "Now, while I was speaking, praying, and confessing sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountains of my God." First, he has this confession, but then he has this supplication. What was the supplication? And what did he request of God? What's going to happen after we go back to the land? We go back to the land of Israel. "Yes, while I was speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel," actually the angel Gabriel, "whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, caused to fly swiftly, reached me about the time of the evening offering." It's probably late afternoon. "And he informed me and talked with me, and he says, 'O Daniel, I have now come forth to give you skill to understand.'" And this is what God wants to do for us. He wants to give us skill to understand what he's going to do on this planet. He says, "At the beginning of your supplication, the command went out, and I have come now to tell you that you are greatly beloved." I like that. I like that. Greatly beloved. That's what he thinks about all of us. It's not just peculiar to Daniel, but that's what he thinks about all of us. "Greatly beloved. Therefore, consider the matter and understand the vision. At the beginning of your supplication, the command went out." Well, whose command? Well, God's command. God commanded Gabriel to give the information to Daniel. Daniel wrote it down, and he has given it to us today. "The command went out, and I have come to tell you." I do like that, though. Daniel, you're greatly beloved. That's important. "At the beginning of your prayer, I was sent to you to give you an understanding of God's plan for Israel." And he even says, you got to pay attention to this, Daniel. What's going to happen? Listen carefully. What's going to happen next? "Now, here's what it says. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city." 70 weeks. We're going to see it's 70 times 7. 70, and then a week is 7. So 70 times 7. And we'll explain all this. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city, to finish the transgressions, to make an end of sin, or sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. So 70 weeks are determined for your people, that is, for Israel and for the holy city, Jerusalem. So keep that in mind, 70 weeks. So the prophecy, it's for Israel, and it's for the city of Jerusalem. This is not for the United States. It's not for Russia. It's not for Afghanistan. It is for Israel and the holy city of Jerusalem. The timeline of this prophecy is 70 weeks. And the purpose of the prophecy and the 70 weeks is this: to make an end of sin. We know that Jesus did that. To make reconciliation for iniquity. To bring in, that's going to be Israel later on. To bring in everlasting righteousness. We know that that's not here yet, right? I mean, you read the paper, it's not here. To bring in everlasting righteousness. Seal up the vision, that would be to close it off, and the prophecy, where there is no more need of prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. We know what is the most holy. That's Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. Now, concerning the vision, it splits it up into three sections. Section one, it says, know and therefore and understand from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. You guys can add, what's 7 and 62? 69, okay. You can follow a little bit on this chart, too. There shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall, even in troublesome times. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. So let's bring in this, another Rosetta Stone, you might. This Sir Robert Anderson wrote an interesting book in The Coming Prince, and he helps us to decipher this particular prophecy. So we start off in verse 24, 25. It says, from the decree to rebuild Jerusalem till the coming of the Messiah, there's going to be, and we're using 70 weeks, 70, and then multiplying it times weeks, that's 490 years. Trust me on this. You'll see how this fits in. And if you look at your chart, on the very far bottom left-hand corner, you see the decree of Artaxerxes that was March 14th, 445 B.C. So if you think about 69 weeks, that's 483 years, okay? The total span of this is 490 years. 490 years that God is going to deal with Israel in a very specific way. So the decree of Artaxerxes, March 14th, 445 B.C., to rebuild Jerusalem. If you look at the first two boxes there, you see the 7 weeks, that's 49 weeks, or 49 years. You see the second box, 62 weeks, or 434 years. That's the total of 483 years. So it starts off with this decree of the Persian king Artaxerxes, March 14th, 445 B.C., till the coming of the Messiah, and that would have been, actually, the coming of the Messiah as prince would have been when Jesus rides into Jerusalem on April 6, 32 A.D., exactly to the day. Now, they used 360-day years. They don't use, that's in the Hebrew, 360. If you take that those dates and put them together, you have exactly 483 years. So from the time Artaxerxes says, go build Jerusalem, till the time Jesus rides into Jerusalem on a donkey is exactly 483 years. Or 69 weeks, or if you look at it, 173,880 days. To the T, exactly. Not a day before, not a day after. That's exactly what it is. So that's the first part of this prophecy. You guys with me so far? Please shake your heads, yes. Even if you don't believe, even if you don't understand it. All right, so you get it so far. This is going to get a little rougher next week. So this is like a pre-exam today, you know? So this is the prophecy that he, what it is that there's this 70 weeks that God is going to deal specifically with Israel in a way that is particular to his timeline, okay? 490 years in his timeline. So you got 7 weeks, 49 years, they restored Jerusalem. That's Nehemiah, Ezra, those guys go back and build the temple, build the walls. Then you have, after that, you have 62 weeks that until the Messiah, okay, Jesus. That's 434 years, 483 total. So, like I said, Anderson based his prophetic year as 360 days. And now this is interesting because this is based on the ancient history. It's Revelation chapter 11, chapter 13, chapter 12, speaks about these times too. So this 483 years times 360 days, that's the exact time Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a donkey. Jesus started his ministry in the 15th year of Tiberius. You can see that in Luke chapter 3. Tiberius started his reign in 14 AD. So you get to, Jesus starts his ministry about 29 AD. But then, and then also Anderson notes that there's a number of different Passovers that Jesus went through. He went through four of them. And the final Passover is in 32 AD when he was crucified. So we call that the times where he rode into Jerusalem on a donkey. What do we call that? What's Palm Sunday? That's what we do. That's when they threw down the palms and, you know. Okay, so far? Right. So far, so good. Now, Jesus said on that very day that he rode in on a donkey, he said, if you would have known this day, the things that make for your peace. And you remember Jesus wept as he's coming into Jerusalem because he knows just in a short 40 years, the Rome is going to come in and just destroy the temple, wipe out the temple, destroy Jerusalem, kill a million Jews. So he even said that. This, if you knew this day, so if you were anywhere back then, and you just sat down at face value and read what they said, you could predict when the prince was going to come into Jerusalem, the Messiah. And that's exactly what happened. But, you know, a lot of people today don't know the days we live in. They don't know that. They don't know. They're biblically illiterate. They're deceived. They think everything is going to continue. You know, Jesus said, or Paul said, sudden destruction is going to happen on this earth. This is not going to be, it doesn't have to build up. We wait for it to build up, build up, build up, build up. It's going to happen suddenly. And, you know, we're to know the days that the Lord has before us. And this is not to scare anybody. This, you know, Jesus said, look up. Your redemption draws near. So section two on this. Of this prophecy. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end shall be with the flood. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. Who destroyed the temple in 70 AD? Rome. Rome. So he says, the people of the prince who is to come. Now, this is not a good prince. This is the Antichrist. Let me read it again. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. That's exactly what happened in 70 AD. The end of it shall be with the flood. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. Israel was expelled from the land. They went through many persecutions, Spain, Europe. They went through France. They went through many persecutions, culminating in the Holocaust, where 6 million Jews were killed by Adolf Hitler. First, it speaks about the prince who is to come. You can mark that, and just trust me because you'll see. It's the Antichrist. It speaks about his people will destroy Jerusalem and the temple. So this is Rome. Rome destroys Jerusalem and the temple 70 AD. So the Antichrist is somehow connected to Rome. You know, we went through the chapter 2 and then chapter 7 of Daniel speaking about, if you didn't get the other chart, there's more on the back table, kind of lining up the different prophecies. But we know Rome is the last empire, being the iron or the legs of iron, the east and the western Rome. And then this final kingdom, the Antichrist kingdom, is the feet with the 10 toes, 10 kingdoms. So we're talking about this whole period of time. We're talking 493 years. Artaxerxes gives the command. Exactly 483 years later, Jesus comes in on the donkey. So we know what 770 or 70 weeks of Daniel is 490. Subtract 483 years. That is already completed, past history. You don't even have to worry about that. How many years are left? Thank you. Seven. Do the math, right? That's that simple. 7 years. This is where we get the tribulation period. You know, the tribulation is going to be worldwide, but it is going to be focused on Israel. It is going to be focused on Israel. Israel, God has to complete, he says, reconciliation to iniquity. He's going to bring in Israel as fruit. You know, you see the 144,000 in Revelation. This is where we get the 7-year period. So you had this last 7-year period, and Gabriel deals with that in verse 27. He says, then he, that's the prince, that's the Antichrist, shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, or the 7 years. But in the middle of the week, he shall bring an end to the sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of abomination shall one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate. Kind of cryptic, but Jesus explains that. Paul explains that in the New Testament. This is a prophecy concerning Antichrist in the last 7 years, which we know as the tribulation. And he's speaking about the Antichrist. And we will see this in other chapters, making a covenant with Israel for the last 7 years. We will also see, we might not be enraptured, but we will also see the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. That has to happen. We will see restarting of the sacrifices and the offerings in the temple in Jerusalem. We will see in the middle of the 7-year period that the Antichrist is going to stop it. Right in the middle of that 7-year period, 3.5 years in, he's going to stop the sacrifices. He's going to place an idol and himself in the sanctuary, and he's going to say, I am God. And Paul says that. He says he's going to do that. Jesus called it the abomination of desolation. And jumping ahead here, other scriptures that we won't have time to deal with. There's a lot of them. So here we see the plan for Israel. The first 483 years have been dealt with, and they are history. The last 7 years are future, even to us. God will deal with Israel. And we know the last 7-year period will be a time of great turmoil. Jesus said it's going to be a time worse than any other time in men's history. Any other time. I always compare the flood to that. The flood was pretty radical. 8 people survived. This one, the problem is that a lot of people will be in the midst of the punishment. They're not going to drown. They're going to be, you know, the wrath of God is going to be poured out on. So you have this last 7 years. The last 7 years will be, the last 3.5 years of that 7-year period is going to be called the Great Tribulation. That's when God pours out his wrath. He said, a time of turmoil that the earth has never seen ever before and will never see again. So shake your heads one more time for me, you guys. You know, that's good. It's pretty easy. So we've been talking about God's timeline. Daniel recognized the times he lived in, Daniel's prayer, of humility and compassion for Israel, God's plan for Israel and Jerusalem, we see on this whole chart. You know, the precision of the Bible never ceases to amaze me. It really never, I mean, to the day, from the time he said, go build Jerusalem, till Jesus rides into exactly 483 years. We have a God that's very accurate on his prophecies. So, you guys ready for the test? All right, let's go. Let's do this. Open book. Look at the chart. All right, we just don't want Shelley to answer all the questions. Yeah. So look at the chart. How many years in total is determined to Israel by God? Who said that? All right. Gold star, man. Yeah. No, that's good. That's it. 490 years is the total time God has determined upon Israel and its people and Jerusalem. How many years to rebuild Jerusalem after the captivity ends? 49. Okay. How many years to the Messiah after the decree of Artaxerxes in the far left-hand corner? How many years? 43. All right. Good. All right. So you're getting it. Are you guys looking at the chart so you can understand it? How long is the tribulation? 7 years. All right. What starts the tribulation? You're too fast, man. Yeah. She's my conspiracy girl, you know. When I want to talk about prophecy, I just go to Shelley. So what starts the tribulation, you guys? The covenant with the Antichrist. That's what starts it. What happens in the middle of the tribulation? All right. That's when the Antichrist goes in, sets up himself as God. And then literally all hell breaks loose on earth with the wrath of God being poured out on the world. It happens in Israel, but it's all over the world that this happens. So what happens at the very end of the tribulation? Second return, right? Second return. So you guys got it down, you know? When is the rapture? Could be any time. You see the question marks there? Before the wrath is poured out. So, how many angels can fit onto the head of a pin? All right. This helps. It really helps to write it down. It helps me to understand it. And I hope it helps you guys. Here's the best question, though. How are you guys doing with the Lord? How are you guys doing with the Lord? That's internal. You know him. How are you doing? What is God? Do you have a relationship with God? Maybe if you don't have a relationship with God, maybe you need to talk with somebody. I'm willing to talk with anybody. You know, if you don't know the Lord, I'm here to talk to you. I want to introduce you to my Father, to your Father. That's what I want to do. I don't know if you guys know that God has a timeline on your life. You know that? He's got a timeline on your life. And it's very precise. It's all set up. He knows exactly what he's going to be doing. God has been keeping his eyes on all of us from the time we were born. Probably in the womb, right? In the womb, he's been keeping an eye on us. You know what he's doing? He's watching, he's waiting, and he's drawn us to himself. So, because he loves you.